On the day on which we celebrated Vyasa Puja, I spoke about the attraction of Srila Prabhupada. How is it, or what is it about him that's so attractive about him to others? Not to everyone, but to his disciples. He became the one to whom they sing, Janme Janme Prabhu Se, he is my Lord, birth after birth. There wasn't time to finish all that I had to say on that day. There'll never be enough time, but what I specifically wanted to say, there was not enough time, so I thought to continue. And anyway, why should we restrict glorification and remembrance of Srila Prabhupada to one day only? It's nice, better to extend that. I had come up to the point of speaking about Srila Prabhupada's impression among the young people who came to him in America and became his first disciples. Srila Prabhupada was certainly enigmatic in as much as he very much appealed to the mostly hippies, beatnik types, among whom he ministered in the Lower East Side of New York City, who had deliberately cut themselves off to a large extent from the rest of the society all around them, and a common slogan among them was never, don't trust anyone over 30, whereas Srila Prabhupada was more than twice 30 years old. Srila Prabhupada, in the midst of the hippies, free sex, Srila Prabhupada advocated no illicit sex. In the midst of their usage of various psychotropic drugs, Srila Prabhupada was against that. There was no generation gap that was something that the hippies felt. The hippies rejected the straight society, and their parents felt there's generation gap. They just can't, neither side could relate to each other. But Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't, even though he was much older, he could relate very well with the hippie. He knew, but actually with anyone and everyone, he could relate with them, even though he came from a very different background. And that was another enigmatic feature of Srila Prabhupada, that he was so different, and probably the fact that he was so different in a way, in many ways, that the hippies, who were desperately trying to be as different as they could, couldn't have imagined. He was not only so different, looked completely different to anything anyone had seen at that time. But at the same time, he was very down to earth. He wasn't bewildered by the fast, complex, impersonal life of New York City. He adjusted to it very well. As he used to say, I'm a Calcutta boy, and Calcutta and New York City, they're both big and weird cities. They have it in common that the people have it, the people of New York City and of Calcutta have it in common that they are that eccentricity is normal, and the whole ambience of both places is well, weird, how to say. It's something unusual. So, Srila Prabhupada, he spent a little time observing the people that he deliberately spent time observing the people of America before he embarked on any serious missionary work. But he fitted into New York City. Even though he looked so different and was so different, at the same time he could, he was expert in dealing with people. Now that might sound like someone, just like in New York City, that people expert in dealing with them means expert in cheating them. One disciple of Srila Prabhupada, I believe he's from New York City, but at least he was working there before he joined the movement, told me that before he joined the movement, his job was to, I believe he said that he was in the Empire State Building in an office there, and his job was to, from the phone directory, just phone people up and sell them, or attempt to sell them, I guess he must have sold some, sell them pieces of real estate in the Appalachian Mountains, and completely useless land, and he would convince them to buy it. A cheating business. But Srila Prabhupada's expertise in dealing with people was not to exploit them. He dealt with everyone for the sake of bringing them to Krishna consciousness. But he was naturally at ease with everyone, and he wasn't... Another point about his expertise in interpersonal dealings was he could sense a cheat. He was not one to be cheated very easily, although people newly coming to New York City generally are, and you'll find in big cities like New York and London and where there are many tourists, often people coming from small towns of other countries, and they can't imagine that anyone would cheat them. They're coming from places where such cheating is just not part of the way of life, and they take advantage of that. But Srila Prabhupada wasn't one to be cheated very easily. Later on, as ISKCON expanded, or even in that little storefront in on Second Avenue in New York City, Srila Prabhupada... It also became apparent that he was a very expert manager, not only in dealing with people but at an individual level, but in organizing legal matters, financial matters, both the raising and spending of funds. So Srila Prabhupada was expert in so many ways. So although he looked like a monk who was had nothing to do with this world, and in one sense he didn't, but on the other hand, he was very down-to-earth and very expert in dealing with it also. I was talking about how Srila Prabhupada was very different in so many ways. One way that was very different was that at the time Srila Prabhupada was in America, just newly in America, the whole country was gripped with the phenomenon of the space race. John F. Kennedy had said in the early 1960s that before the end of the decade, we want to put a man on the moon, which was considered that was still we were still decades away from doing such a thing. The Russians were far ahead in the space race. And there was this fever about, yes, we're going to do it. We're going to put a man on the moon. We've got to beat the Russians to it. And Srila Prabhupada would regularly say, it's not possible. A reporter in San Francisco, you can see this conversation, that he asked Srila Prabhupada, well, what would happen if actually a man did go to the moon, which it looks like it's going to happen quite soon, wouldn't that... diminish your disciples' faith in you because you're so emphatic that no one can go to the moon. And Prabhupada said, no, they're not going to go to the moon, so it's not going to diminish their faith. And he said, he kept on insisting, well, what if anyone did go to the moon? And Prabhupada said, well, they're not going to go, so it's not going to happen. And then even when they did so-called go to the moon, Prabhupada, he said it was a hoax. Or maybe they went to Rahu or something. But he didn't accept that they'd gone to the moon because Shastra says you can't go there by mechanical means. So that was something else which made Prabhupada very different, probably the kind of thing that the hippies would like. One lecture, much later, actually, we're only talking about 11 years of Srila Prabhupada's active preaching mission in the Western world, but we tend to think of it as a long time because Srila Prabhupada did so much and so much happened in that time. So I believe it was in Australia that Srila Prabhupada, in the course of lecturing, happened to mention, as is mentioned in Shastra, about giant eagles that fly from planet to planet. Their breakfast is elephants, and they lay eggs in midair that hatch in outer space. So, one disciple, rather timidly, at the end of the lecture, said that, well, it seems a little hard to believe. And then Srila Prabhupada responded, what do you know? You are still within the womb of your mother. Bengali saying, it's to say that you didn't even reach the stage of being a baby yet. Who are you to talk about anything? So Srila Prabhupada, he firmly rejected any doubt about the Puranic descriptions of the universe, the idea we've studied space and they can't be possible that there are such things as giant eagles flying in space. And what would they breathe, for instance? How can there be giant eagles that eat elephants and so on and so on? And the fact that the Shastra could be wrong, Srila Prabhupada didn't entertain such an idea. So many of the things that Srila Prabhupada said would have just amazed his early followers. One local rock band, local celebrities called the Thugs, happened to attend one of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, in that lecture in particular, it's not known, probably he didn't know that this rock group was there, and it probably wouldn't have made any difference either, because this rock group, they specialized in specific, graphically obscene lyrics. So Srila Prabhupada spoke about, in that lecture while they were present, spoke about the futility and sinfulness and in all other ways undesirability of sex life in general. The Thugs were never seen again at the Matchless Gift Store. That Srila Prabhupada could speak among the hippies about the futility of sex life, and that sex should be, if at all indulged in, should be indulged in according to religious principles within marriage. This was certainly something which wasn't popular among the hippies, but Srila Prabhupada said it nevertheless. In other words, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't try to tailor himself to the hippies. He didn't change himself so the hippies might accept him better. But he presented Krishna consciousness. I was just about to say he presented himself as he was, but his whole aim was not to, his whole aim was not to present himself. He might have seemed that he was very flamboyant, coming in with the style of dress and his hairstyle and everything so different about him. But Srila Prabhupada just kept that dress style because that is the dress style of a sannyasi. He was a committed sannyasi. And he didn't see any need to change that because he'd come to another country. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada reported that a Ramakrishna mission sannyasi who had been in America many years had advised Srila Prabhupada when Srila Prabhupada was new in New York City that now you're in the West, you have to make some adjustments, you have to wear Western clothes, you have to eat with a knife and fork. Srila Prabhupada, he used to make fun of Bon Maharaj, his godbrother who had gone to the West and learned to eat with a knife and fork. This knife and fork is required if you're eating meat. It's not required if you're eating vegetarian food. You stick the fork in to hold the piece of meat and then you cut it with a knife. Not required for vegetarian food. So Srila Prabhupada said that I didn't come to take anything from the West. Whatever Indians come, they come to learn technology, they come as beggars. I came to give something. So Srila Prabhupada, he didn't adopt Western dress or Western food or Western style of eating, sitting at a table and chair to eat. He came to give a different culture altogether. One thing that the hippies really appreciated in Srila Prabhupada is that music. The hippies are really into music. And Srila Prabhupada was into music also, and a completely different style to what they were used to. But he was into it, and when the drum, some kind of drum was arranged for Srila Prabhupada to play, that those who were themselves musicians, they could understand that Srila Prabhupada was, even though the basic style of kirtan is very simple, but that Srila Prabhupada was an expert musician. Something else that really set Srila Prabhupada apart from the hippies, who were really deeply in tamagun. They thought that they were being very spiritual, but by taking drugs, and they thought that sex was spiritual because their idea of something spiritual is something that gives you some intense experience, and sex gives some intense experience. But Srila Prabhupada was actually spiritual by abstaining from all forms of sense gratification and being deeply in tamaguna. The hippies, apart from being dedicated to free sex, intoxication, they were also dedicated to long sessions of sleeping. They could stay up all night and sleep all day. But Srila Prabhupada is just the opposite. He habitually slept less than 5 hours a day, and that also in bits and pieces. He would sleep a little, maybe 1.5 to 2 hours at night, 1.5 to 2 hours in the afternoon after lunch, and little nap here and there, snap, as Srila Prabhupada used to call it. Which to the hippies must have been something just amazing. They couldn't have imagined. So many devotees, their first impressions of Prabhupada was something amazing, but it wasn't just the first impressions, but they went on again and again. It was reinforced by Srila Prabhupada's the whatever he said and did, it was superhuman. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada was very normal and down to earth in many ways, and he didn't have any assuming airs. When Srila Prabhupada was present, devotees around the world, we wouldn't get news of him very soon. Mostly news of him would come by, well, in London, where I joined, because London was a stopover point between India and America. There weren't direct flights between India and America at that time. And most of our devotees were from America, and Srila Prabhupada was calling devotees to be in India. So many devotees either going to India from America or returning would stop over in London, and we would get news of Srila Prabhupada from those coming from India. We'd also hear news through those who had heard from others who had been in India, and then there were BBT reports, and which would give news of Srila Prabhupada. What's he translating? What are some of the new things he's translated? What are some of the things he said? So Srila Prabhupada was gradually revealing the knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Devotees didn't know what was in Srimad Bhagavatam beyond whatever was translated and published. And whatever was published, most devotees hadn't read it. It took time to catch up with whatever was being published. Srila Prabhupada often lectured on the parts of the Bhagavatam that he was translating, which means they hadn't been published yet. So it was new revelations, new things were being told that we'd never heard of before. So it was very exciting in that sense, that from Prabhupada we're always getting something new, and in his conversations there was always something new to say, how he dealt with people, he met with important people, he had various plans for spreading Krishna consciousness, which he gradually revealed. So these are some of the facets of Srila Prabhupada's superhuman personality, which endeared him to, impressed on the minds of his disciples, that Srila Prabhupada was from another world, not of this world. Now, another way in which Srila Prabhupada was clearly different to his followers and everyone else in the world was his purity. We accepted Srila Prabhupada as a pure devotee, not as a matter of dogma, but just observably, he was completely absorbed in God consciousness. His whole being was one of giving Krishna consciousness to others. Srila Prabhupada's purity was of an order far above that of anyone in this world, and he moved among his disciples and lived with them, but he was clearly on a different level altogether. When we speak about Srila Prabhupada's purity, that can be considered in two categories. One, that there was no question of Srila Prabhupada falling down, so moral rectitude. And the other is that his mind was clearly always full of Krishna. So he had both very higher, pure thoughts of Krishna, and he was not imaginable that he could fall down into sense gratification. He was completely dedicated to giving Krishna consciousness, as is stated in Bhagavad Gita, sarva bhuta hite rataha. Krishna describes those persons who are actually devotees of Krishna. They're decorated with all good qualities. One of them, which is sarva bhuta hite rataha, it means dedicated to the welfare of all living beings. So Srila Prabhupada's purity, some facets of that. Often devotees said that Srila Prabhupada was childlike. And what does that mean? We're talking about an older man from the external point of view. A very experienced person. I just said that he was very expert in dealing with people and dealing with the world. He wasn't one to be cheated very easily. He was expert in management and legal matters, financial matters, and so many different dealings of the world. But on the other hand, he also had a natural, not childishness, because childishness means that's not a very good quality, but childlikeness. Childishness means to act like a child in a manner that is unbefitting, but childlikeness means to have a natural innocence that comes of the non-expectation of others behaving badly with you. You're just very innocent, almost naive. Hayagriva, he, in his Hare Krishna explosion, he commented about Srila Prabhupada's chanting, that Srila Prabhupada was like a happy child calling to his maker. Srila Prabhupada also, despite having an old body, was so youthful and vigorous physically that he could work so hard for such long hours and go on long morning walks, walking so fast that his young men, disciples, would become out of breath trying to keep up with him. So this quite unusual. He always was fresh in his outlook, not jaded or faded. He was optimistic, realistic but optimistic also. That yes, we can spread Krishna consciousness very widely. People can take to Krishna consciousness. A very energetic, vigorous personality. At the same time, his purity was a natural and innocent kind of purity, not one. There's another kind of purity. I'd said that there is no question of Srila Prabhupada falling down. Those who wish to not fall down in Krishna consciousness, they have to very carefully follow the regulative principles, be very careful in their dealings with non-devotees, with the opposite sex. They have to police themselves and take their life under control so that they don't become prey to the urgings of the senses. But Srila Prabhupada's condition of not falling down was not one that came from caution and following the regulated principles, but a natural purity of heart by which he had no attraction to anything gross or fallen, and there was no question in his mind of him having any tendency to fall down. So his was a natural childlike innocence, and just like a child. Why is a child called innocent and pure? Well, one major reason for that is that they don't have manifest sexual desires. So that was there with Srila Prabhupada also. He didn't have manifest desires to enjoy this world, and therefore he had seemed like innocence and purity, because he was not he was not indulging in sexual or any sensual activities. It was beyond his thought. Satsarup Maharaj compared Srila Prabhupada to the type of heavy sense indulger who, by his sensual involvement and his always being hungry for more and more sense gratification, heavily involved in sense gratification, such people tend to age early. They expend all their bodily vigor, and such a person, they tend to look worn out, weary, tend to gradually lose their enthusiasm because the more you indulge in sense gratification, the less your body has the ability to do so. So Srila Prabhupada wasn't worn out like that. He was very fresh and lively. And Satsarup writes that anyone who is with Prabhupada, I guess that would mean especially his disciples, anyone who is with Prabhupada felt the possibilities of being free from sexual indulgence. He felt, well, in the presence of Prabhupada, it seemed that Krishna conscious was very easy, and overcoming sense gratification was very easy. What is the difficulty? Prabhupada would say. And in Srila Prabhupada's presence, it seemed like it could be natural and normal to be a pure devotee of Krishna. Because for Prabhupada it was natural and normal. That presence was very powerful to be with, to be in. Another feature of Srila Prabhupada's purity was that he wasn't cutting a profile. He wasn't trying to show, oh, I'm a great sadhu, or he didn't advertise himself or try to impress others. He was just naturally Krishna conscious. If he didn't know something, he wouldn't try to cover it up. If he was mistaken about something, he wouldn't try to cover it up. He once told his disciples that when he first saw snow in New York, he had no idea what snow is, even though that word is there, well-known word, Himalaya, means the place of ice and snow, from which we get the English word, the Himalayas. But in Bengal, in the area which is traditionally known as Bengal, and there's no question of there ever being snow falling in the area of Darjeeling. Is also officially part of West Bengal. They're trying to get out of West Bengal. It's just stuck into West Bengal because it's so small and they don't know what to do with it. But that's a mountainous area with non-Bengalis. And the snow will be there, but the average Bengali has never seen any snow. So when Prabhupada saw snow, he said, he told later to his followers that he thought that he saw in the morning that everything is white, and he thought the whole city had been whitewashed. So that's the kind of charming thing that endeared him to others. He didn't pretend that he'd made a mistake in this matter. And in various other ways, he didn't understand or know everything about everything in the West. And he wouldn't try to cover it up or pretend. If he didn't know something, he'd just take it in his stride. He'd often ask someone, what is that called? What is that thing called? Maybe in the middle of a lecture. Or sometimes he would forget a verse. He would ask a disciple, what is that verse? What is that verse? So Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't cutting a profile, or he didn't speak extensively about himself. He did, sometimes he would do so privately among some of his disciples when relaxing. He would tell some details of his early life, but not with himself at the center. There is one lecture in which he speaks of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and therein, Srila Prabhupada speaks about himself quite a lot also, because he speaks about his own personal interrelationships with him. But clearly, in that lecture, the motive is to glorify Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, not to bring attention to himself. To bring attention to oneself is a common feature of worldly people. They want that others should recognize me, should praise me. But Srila Prabhupada wasn't like that at all. He wanted that everyone become attracted to the qualities, and pastimes, names and forms of Krishna. And he fully endeavored for that. He wasn't interested in promoting himself. So that's another feature of his purity, because pretty much everyone in this world, they like to be praised, but not Srila Prabhupada. He wasn't interested in that. And also his purity and innocence. He was a spontaneous kind of person, in as much as he didn't rehearse to give speeches. He would simply sit down and speak. He would debate with people, informal discussion, and he would often come up with examples which he just thought of on the spot. Spontaneous means sometimes he would get very angry. He didn't try to check that. He would sometimes become spontaneously angry. But at the same time, he was self-controlled. Another enigmatic thing, that his anger wouldn't go beyond bounds. It was for the sake of purifying others by chastising them. So, his humor, even though he had such a grave message, and actually it was very, very extremely grave and heavy message. But even in the middle of delivering or talking with people about such deep topics, Srila Prabhupada, he could add a joke, or he could respond to people in a humorous manner, which would also bring the point home to them. So these are just different facets of Srila Prabhupada's personality: his humor, his spontaneity, his childlike naivete, and so many different features of Srila Prabhupada, which by which it could be understood that he was a completely different kind of person to anyone. There was no one like Srila Prabhupada. Even later on, some of his devotees went to India and they became acquainted with some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, but still, Srila Prabhupada was unique. The reason for that, Tomara Hridaye, what is that? Tomara Hridaye, Govinda Bishram. Because Govinda, Krishna, is manifest in the heart of Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada, although he was very different, his aim was not per se to be different. Although he was different in his character, his clothing, his message, his food, speaking Sanskrit, and so many things, he could be called, from the external point of view, someone who is exotic. But Srila Prabhupada's aim was not to stand out from others and to impress others, but simply he was a pure devotee of Krishna. And that way, he was certainly different to everyone else in the world, and he stood out. Everything Srila Prabhupada said and did was overflowing. Just overflowing with pure devotion to Krishna. It's so apparent in everything that he said and did, and which we couldn't have imagined otherwise. If we that whatever is in the books, we can. The books mean Srila Prabhupada's books. We can read them and we can hear about pure devotees, but actually we saw in the personality of Srila Prabhupada what it means to be a pure devotee of Krishna. His chanting, I mean, there are so many devotees who chant now, and they chant very melodiously and very devotionally, but still, Srila Prabhupada's chanting, although very simple in some ways, it was just pure nectar because it was fully imbued with pure love of Krishna. There's nothing else in Srila Prabhupada's chanting but prayer to Krishna, O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. So that's another feature of Srila Prabhupada's purity, his chanting. Just by hearing his chanting, or just by hearing his voice, people could become affected by that, because the level of purity is incomparable. One devotee describes that he, remembering seeing Srila Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasas and speaking, the impression it made on him. So often the just Srila Prabhupada, he might not have been doing anything that we might consider special. Of course, everything that Srila Prabhupada did was special because he was so special. Because Tomara Hridaye Shada Govinda Vishram, because Govinda is always manifested in his heart. But even seemingly normal activities of Srila Prabhupada would seem very special. It's just something different, some different quality about it altogether. So this devotee described that he remembers Srila Prabhupada sitting on his Vyasasan and speaking, and the devotee said, I don't remember what Srila Prabhupada said there, but I just remember sitting there trying to listen. How completely calm his divine grace was, always spotlessly clean, garlanded with fragrant flowers, and emanating the sweet aroma of sandal paste, which he often had on his forehead. Generally, when Srila Prabhupada sat for class, he would be garlanded and a devotee would pat some sandalwood paste onto his forehead. Srila Prabhupada liked that very much. So this devotee speaks of the calmness of Srila Prabhupada, that sense of peace, peacefulness. But then occasionally his pure love of Krishna, which was clearly the defining factor of his very being, it would manifest, it would just burst out and make itself known and shown. Not very often. Sometimes speaking on the Vyasasan, Srila Prabhupada would just go into ecstasy. I remember I heard several times one lecture which of Srila Prabhupada's which just finishes abruptly. This was a lecture in Mayapur at the Mayapur festival in which many devotees were present. And Srila Prabhupada is speaking straightforward philosophy as usual, and speaking in the usual urgent tones. It means he's communicating to devotees. This is very serious matter. It's not just some intellectual discussion. So Srila Prabhupada at this point in the lecture was speaking about surrender to Krishna. We have to surrender to Krishna. And then Srila Prabhupada said, of course, I'm paraphrasing, said, just like the gopis, they never wanted anything from Krishna. So he just used that as an example. And having said that, Srila Prabhupada was suddenly stunned and stopped. Just in the course of philosophically explaining what is surrender to Krishna, he mentioned the gopis and their surrender to Krishna. And all of a sudden, Srila Prabhupada was overpowered by the waves, a tsunami of ecstasy, of remembering the gopis' love for Krishna, and just stopped, and he was stunned, and what was happening in his consciousness, we don't exactly know, but the external symptoms could be seen. There was just silence. And then the devotees, they were sitting there. The Prabhupada was silent. The devotees were silent. They didn't know what to do. And then after maybe a minute and a half, which seemed like much, much longer, Hansa Dutta was there, started singing the Maha Mantra. And then Srila Prabhupada, he sung, and then some devotees joined with him. They weren't sure whether to join, a few joined with him, and then Prabhupada came to external consciousness, and that was the end anyway. Srila Prabhupada left. He'd already been lecturing for more than half an hour. So later in the day, Brahmananda asked Srila Prabhupada, because there'd been some controversy among the devotees, that should, if Srila Prabhupada's in ecstasy, should we just leave him there undisturbed? Or should we, as Hansa Dutta did, summon him out of that consciousness by starting kirtan? So Brahmananda cautiously said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, today in the lecture you went into ecstasy. And then Srila Prabhupada responded, well, I don't often do that, as if to apologize. Because Srila Prabhupada was not given to displays of ecstasy, but sometimes it just happened. He just became uncontrollable. We can understand it's like a volcano, that within him there's always the churning of pure ecstatic love for Krishna, and sometimes it bursts out. Hayagriva describes one lecture in the early days of the movement. This was probably in San Francisco, I can't remember. So Srila Prabhupada, during this lecture, he had been discussing about the Goswamis living in Vrindavan. He Radhe Rajadevi Keche Lalite He Nanda Suno Kutaha, calling out for Krishna, for Radha and Krishna, where are you? And then Hayagriva writes, I'll quote this. After this, Swamiji says no more but sits cross-legged on the dais, hands folded, eyes closed, in sudden, unexpected, rapt meditation. It's as though he's been struck by a bolt from the blue. As we sit watching him, we all suddenly feel an electric, vibrant stillness settling over the temple. This is something unusual, we all sense, yet dare not speak, dare not look at one another, dare not take our eyes from him. Perceivable spiritual phenomenon. We can actually see him withdraw deep within himself and leave the body, the temple, the city, the world far behind. So deep is his communion. We bathe in this intense silence for only 3 or 4 minutes, but as in earthquakes, those minutes seem eternal for us all. But unlike earthquakes, there is no tumult. Just an awesome stillness prolonging those minutes more than tumult ever could. We see his consciousness return to his body. He clears his throat, slowly opens his eyes, and reaches for the symbols beside him. End of quote. So Srila Prabhupada, he actually tried to control. He was not given to making displays of uncontrolled ecstasy to show that, well, I'm so pure. But that was another sign of his purity, that he didn't want to show it. In fact, he would always state that one's engagement in devotional service, that one talks about topics about Krishna, engages in activities meant for Krishna's pleasure. This is the real sign of Krishna consciousness. Not that one has displays of ecstasy. He would emphasize, you serve Krishna. Don't just make a big show. He would say, work now, samadhi later. That was a formula coined by Srila Prabhupada. But actually, it was seen from Srila Prabhupada that working now for Krishna means samadhi now. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't just stay in Vrindavan and enjoy the samadhi there, but he brought his samadhi to the Western world. And his followers, they also experience that. That if we fully absorb ourselves in the service of Srila Prabhupada, which means the service of Krishna, that we also become blessed by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, and then we also experience that ecstasy. And even at the time of performing various services, it may seem very difficult in various ways, but we feel the connection with Krishna. Here also, at Govinda's island, it's Siddhi Bhavati Karmaja. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that perfection comes from work. Well, he says that in relation to what Srila Prabhupada called fruitive activities, karmis, kangshanta, karmanam, Siddhim yajanta iha devataha kshipram hi manushela. Okay? Siddhi bhavati karmaja. Krishna says here that people who desire fruition, in perfection. It's not really perfection, but fruition or results. They desire results in karma, Vedic prescribed duties. In other words, they want to act piously and get the results of Sri Aishvarya Prajep Savaha, the results of having beautiful women, opulence, big families, and so on. So to fulfill that aim, they worship the demigods, and actually, by doing so, they quickly achieve those results, and siddhi bhavati karmaja, and they fulfill their results by following the path of karma. So here also, at Govinda Dweep, there's a lot of work to do, just in case you hadn't noticed, I'm sure you all noticed. But bliss will come from the mercy of Krishna, which manifests as the purification of heart, bliss in the heart, that will come by dedicated service. More than talking about bliss, more than talking about prema, if one engages in the service of Krishna, one is blessed with that ecstasy. And that was very much part of Srila Prabhupada's mission, that he engaged his disciples in much service meant for promulgating the Sankirtan movement. And by that means, they were to become purified and advanced and dear to Krishna by working hard for Krishna. Another facet of Srila Prabhupada's purity is that he was beyond fall down into sense gratification. Quite unlike his disciples, who were quite prone to fall into sense gratification. The whole idea of following four regulated principles was not something that they had any idea of whatsoever until they came to Srila Prabhupada. But for Srila Prabhupada, because they, that means we, were raised in a hedonistic culture, then we just take these things for granted. But for Srila Prabhupada, it's not just because of that, because he's a pure devotee, and he was raised in a culture in which not indulging in such things is just completely normal. Not that he was living in Calcutta, and that he was actually living in the Mohammedan, in the area where Srila Prabhupada lived, there were many Muslims, which means a lot of meat eating. But in the family that Srila Prabhupada was raised in, and the community he was raised in, there was no question of meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, or intoxication. Well, in the family, in the specific family, in the broader family, some of Srila Prabhupada described that some of his, as a child, he would see that some of his uncles and this and that, they would have prostitutes and all this kind of thing. But Srila Prabhupada, he wrote about himself that, although I had immense opportunities to indulge in the four pillars of sinful life because I was connected to a very aristocratic family, Krishna always saved me, and throughout my whole life, I do not know what is illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, or gambling. Now, everything about Srila Prabhupada was special and imbued with his pure ecstatic Krishna consciousness. Even his cooking. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he once commented that the taste of the preparations he cooked was like pure nectar. I never tasted prasadam as when Prabhupada cooked it himself. It was completely different, totally on the transcendental platform. And all the devotees who took prasadam cooked by Prabhupada, they all said that. It's just like, or something like this, there is vegetarian food and there is prasadam. And there are expert cooks, Indian cooks. But however expert they may be, if they're not devotees and they don't offer that to Krishna, that even though the food may taste very nice, it's just not the same as prasadam. It doesn't satisfy, it feels bad. I know the experience. There's a tremendous difference between even the best vegetarian cooking and that which is cooked by devotees with love for Krishna. So, similarly, what Srila Prabhupada cooked, that was something on a different platform again. I didn't personally experience that. I've heard about it from many of my god brothers. So, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for now, and Krishna willing, we'll continue tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.